to the Hacking Your Health podcast with Ben Canning and Dave Kennedy. Two guys heading out to hack body, mind, business, and beyond. We are here to provide a single source, bullshit-free guide to understanding your body and how you can live better for longer.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Ben Canning.
And I'm Dave Kennedy.
And this is Hacking Your Health Podcast, and we have absolutely no idea what we're going to talk about today. How are you, man?
Hey, I'm doing good, actually. I'm much better. When we did that recording with Helmy last week, I was a little bit under the weather, so I didn't talk as much as I normally would. I tried to, like, you know, keep it interactive and everything, but I was feeling like total shit. So I'm just getting over this cold. It's been kicking my ass. Like, this is the first time I've actually been sick in, like, 2 years. I've made it through not getting COVID ever. You know, my whole family got COVID. I escaped it because of all the supplements I was taking. You know, you take 50 supplements and COVID's like, fuck that, I'm not going to touch you. And then,
taking the multivitamins.
That's right, the multivitamins, which had to ban a guy a second time for that. My son comes home with like a tiny sniffle. He's like, he's got a little scratchy throat. I'm fine. And then like 3 days later, I'm like wrecked, like totally wrecked. Like, I mean, sore throat, drainage, you know, all upper respiratory. But I still got my workouts in. I did take a day off because I listened to myself and my body and my Whoop recovery. Thank you. Yeah. This is a big step for me, everybody.
Coach.
Obviously, I had to coach you. I talked to you about it. I was like trying to talk myself into working out. You're trying to talk myself out of working out. So I listened, and I've been listening more lately. You have to admit, I've been listening a lot more lately to you. It was good to. I was at Orange Theory this morning, and I would say I was probably about 90% back to capacity. So still a little bit of, you know, raspy throat type of thing, but no drainage anymore. Everything else is going good. So back to normal. How about you, man? How you doing? How are you today?
Do you know what? I'm doing really good. I'm like, I have to fit 1 week's work into 2 days, today and tomorrow, because obviously I'm traveling. So I've like been on calls back to back, but it's a lot of energy and it's a lot of positivity going on. Generally I'm doing good. Training's good. I'm ready for travel. I'm not ready for Orange Theory. I guess it's this day next week I'll be doing Orange Theory. So,
and I've already given all the trainers a heads up, like, hey, you need to destroy him. Like, just
that's
focus
not
in on
that's
Ben.
Not
you know? Yeah, it that is fair. It is fair. It is fair. Listen, you're going to terrorize me in the gym. This is the only opportunity that I have to terrorize you. So
Okay. What do I have to do, like an hour? I think I'll make it. I'll be all right.
It's an hour.
No, aside from that, I'm doing good. Obviously, we had Helmy on the podcast last week. Anybody who's listened to it, I apologize for the sound quality on it. I'll make sure that – I don't know – there's somebody that's really heavy breathing, and I'm pretty sure it's me, so I don't know how to combat
I'm pretty sure it's you, actually. I was going to tell you about that last week. I heard the breathing, and it's like, it's actually like when you get excited about a topic, you'd be like,
you know? I'll just stand here whenever I get excited. So yeah, I don't know what's going on with that, so apologies for my
I'll let you know if I hear it again today.
Okay, I'm weird. Okay. You need like a hand signal, I'll be like, but no, apart from that, everything is really good. I was actually on another podcast.
I'm still mad at you for that, by the way. You know, like, you ever see where if you have a dog and like, you know, you go out to somebody else's house and they have a dog and you pet that dog and you come home and that dog's pissed at you because you're like hanging out with another dog without them. It's like, you know, I'm like a little bit upset.
That's
right
what's
now.
Going
just
on
out there. Yeah.
Well, full disclosure. I mean, number one, I was asked, but then at the end, I was like, you know, next time you should have me and Dave on together. So I think
that was nice.
Fair.
That was nice of you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, that was fair.
Yeah. That was nice.
Yeah, so I did that. But apart from that, just getting ready for going away and doing check-ins and stuff today. It's actually funny. And you know what? I'm going to out myself on this one because I just did Chris's check-in. And I know he's going to say this to you. So in our 1 year coaching anniversary, you obviously got a cardboard cutout of me. It's Chris's 1 year anniversary of coaching this week. And he's getting an actual real life version of me. So he's definitely going to try and get one up on you on that front, but I thought I would tell you rather than it coming secondhand through him.
Yeah, I'm a little bit upset with that. I was actually going to, my plan was all along to fly out to Florida and meet you before Chris did, just to, like, brag and then fly back. But unfortunately, with my crazy schedule and everything with kids, I wasn't able to make it out there. So my plan was thwarted.
That's okay.
But excited to come about coming to America. I mean, I think we're having a good time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know what? It's like, I feel like I haven't traveled in such a long time. Well, cause I haven't, but not, you know, any sort of distance. And it's a lot different. There's a lot of boxes to tick and hoops to jump through and whatever else. So I'm excited, but I'll be more excited when I'm actually sat on the plane on the way. Cause I feel like I'm like, did I remember to do this? Have I got this form? Have I filled this out? But yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to it.
I can't wait to see Ben's suitcase. It's going to be like 95% supplements and protein. And then it's going
to
be
actually,
like...
I was actually going to... I had to do a bit of research on this today. I don't know if I can travel with supplements. Can I bring... Like, I was thinking last night, I was like, can I bring... Like, if I fill out my pill box of like the morning and PM stuff, can I just bring them? Or are they going to think I'm like smuggling drugs when it's like cod liver oil tablets and magnesium?
You know, what I usually do is I keep them in the same container that they come in, you know, like the animal packs, for example, that type of stuff. Yeah. But I've never had any issues traveling.
Maybe actually we'll just bring those animal packs because that makes more sense. I'll just do that. That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. The animal packs are like nice and easy to go and use if you need to. And then
the only thing that I have in my suitcase so far is I have packed 18 t-shirts and I haven't packed anything else. So I need to sort that out because I'm literally going tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. You got a little bit of packing to do there. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's awesome. Apparently, I'm gonna have to pack a pair of running trainers that I'm gonna have to fucking be able to do Orange Theory in.
What size shoe do you wear?
Smaller than you. They're 10 and a half. UK size. So I think that's 11.
So what's 10 and a half? Oh, okay, I'm a 15, so I can help you.
No, so I would need to wear all the socks that I own. Anyway, so today you have the topic, right?
Yes.
You brought it, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, so before we get into the topic, I just want to say, you know,
fuck that guy and the multivitamins.
The multivitamin guy, you know, like, so funny story, you know, we talked about the multivitamin guy a couple weeks ago. It just went nuts on the channel and just started getting enraged about people taking multivitamins and that we're poisoning people by taking multivitamins. Listen, again, do what you want to. You know, I have, you know, I get micronutrient tested. I have micronutrient deficiencies even when I eat whole foods. So I take multivitamins, and generally it's good if you're, you know, expunging a lot of energy, you know, cleaning out your systems, that type of stuff to replenish it with good stuff. I like multivitamins personally, but funny story, banned that guy because he was going crazy. And then, you know, like he started this new account with a different name. And then he started arguing about multivitamins again. And I'm like, man, this has got to be the same guy. So I started looking him up in the Discord server, and lo and behold, was able to trace it back to same guy. I'm like, oh my gosh, really? Like, you're going to start another argument on multivitamins? I'm like, just let it go, dude. Let it go. You know? But someone in the Discord channel actually messaged me and was like, I guarantee you it's that guy again. I'm like, yeah, it's got to be that guy again. And then so I just started doing some research to figure it out. So anyways, that guy's no longer there again. And, you know, the world
is now know from we now know where he lives, and we ship them a lifetime supply of multivitamins.
Yeah. Well, boy, oh boy. He gets just some interesting folks. I mean, obviously, you know, people have their beliefs on their health, and, you know, if things have been successful for them, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I follow a lot of folks that are on the more of the keto diet, you know, that can do that long term, and that's their thing. And that's perfectly fine if that works for you, you know. And I want to say it's for him, it's not the keto diet. It's just his way of living. He just eats a ton of fat and protein, and that he finds that to work really well for him, you know, and he enjoys the food that he eats and everything else, and seldomly eats carbs. So again, it's just what, you know, works best for you. And, you know, we never would knock somebody for that, but also at the same time, be open-minded, on other people having success with other things. Right. You know, the way that I do things, the way that Ben does things, the way that other people do things doesn't mean it's necessarily right. It's what's, you know, good for us. So anyways, that's my disclaimer. And so today's topic is, we had done a original podcast around how to plan your training, right? And how to plan how to do your resistance training exercises. But I had somebody reach out to me and say, hey, I listened to the podcast and I'm still kind of unsure of how to actually structure my training program. Like, what actual, you know, lifts do I do, reps, sets, and how do I actually plan and coordinate things like a full body workout, for example? Or what's the benefits of push pull legs or arms? You know, what are the different types of programs? You know, you hear 5x5s, you hear, you know, all these different things that are out there from a training perspective. And so today's podcast is really getting into, you know, from a resistance training perspective, you know, one, how do you progress and get stronger, i.e., build more muscle? And two, how do you plan your training programs, your resistance training, in a way that allows the maximum amount of potential for muscle growth and strength and everything else that goes along with that. And what do those type of programs look like as an example? So I think it's important to go through like, hey, how do we start a training program? And we'll start from the very basics and then get more to, more progression as you get more advanced. And, you know, what's the most important thing to recognize with all of this is that, you know, every training program is different based on the equipment that you have. It's different off of where you're at from your level of training. It's different from, you know, your body type and what your goals are and accomplishments. So, you know, when we talk about all this, you know, there are things that I have learned, you know, over the past, you know, year and a half with Ben that I do differently now than I did, you know, a year and a half ago. You know, for example, I have an issue with my left shoulder where I can tweak my left shoulder and then, you know, it's aching and hurts and, you know, tears if I do barbell bench presses. So I've, you know, worked around that with more of a Kabuki camber bar, neutral grip bar, to get around that issue there. Same thing for my lower left back problematic area, from that side, which, you know, ultimately sprained sciatica and I'm out for weeks, you know, with back issues. So, and I've switched to more of a belt squat versus, you know, a barbell, back squat or a safety squat bar. So, you know, once you start to go through these routines, you know, you may need to change them if you're experiencing pain or you're not progressing in different areas. If you listen to last week's podcast, the week before, you know, Ben talked about attacking your muscles in different ways or switching up. If you're not getting stronger in a certain movement, to do a different movement to, you know, use different portions of your muscle to get that muscle stronger as you go along if you're not progressing faster. So these are all things that you know, you need to have from a foundational basics perspective, very similarly to your nutrition, very similar to your mindset, you know, things that you build upon over time to help you work out with your program. What do you think, Ben?
Yeah, I think, you know, if we are talking about building out a training program, what you need to look at first is what do you have available? So what do you have available in terms of equipment? So are you training in the house with home gym equipment or whatever you have, or are you training in like a commercial gym or a CrossFit gym or a specific studio gym or whatever? So you need to look at the equipment first of all. So what you have available in terms of equipment, but also what you have available in terms of time, because there's no point building out this amazing training program that, you know, you have to lift 6 days a week and it's going to take you an hour and a half every day and all this shit if you can't actually commit to doing it. So what you have available equipment-wise and what you have available time-wise. Also, one of the biggest things that I ask whenever I'm on the initial call is, what do you actually enjoy doing? So, you know, do you love the deadlift? Do you love, you know, more high-intensity stuff? Do you love to work out on machines? Like, what do you actually enjoy? Because I think that that's something that is often overlooked in terms of training programs, because people almost see it like a lot of people see training as almost like a punishment, and it's not something they should enjoy. But I think that you will have greater success if it's something that you actually go into and something that you enjoy. So they would be the three sort of main start points for me. The other thing would be, I guess, is, as you said, like where you're at in the journey or what I would call your training age. So how long you've been training consistently for at some sort of level. So not like just going to the gym or whatever else, like actually being able to progress, like, you know, on a structured plan and whatever else. If you're quite new to training, you have a lot more variety in terms of, no matter what you do, really, it's going to be a new stimulus on your muscle. So what you have available is, you know, a broader spectrum of things. Then you need to maybe get more specific as you go down the road in terms of like later on in your training career. So yeah, in terms of that, like you can recover quicker if you've got a lower overall muscle mass and whatever else. There's a lot more sort of, like I said, variety that you can do on that front.
And I think age also plays a big important factor too, right? So if you're younger in nature, you know, and your goals are strength, there's things that you can do to push that strength much further versus somebody that might be older that's trying to build muscle mass. And there's a big difference between muscle mass and strength, different muscle fibers that handle different things. So with hypertrophy, you know, your goal is muscle growth. So if you want to look good with your shirt off, you know, have a good beach body, you may not be the strongest person in the world. You look at these bodybuilders, they're strong, but they're not the strongest. They're not as strong as powerlifters. You know, powerlifters that they're just these massive beasts of mammoths, you know, but have, you know, usually a big gut. They are 10 times stronger, if not more, than bodybuilders that have much more muscle mass than they are, just because of how our bodies work. So, you know, understanding strength and size is very different as well. The more muscle mass you have, the more calories you burn, the more you can eat, the more you can, you know, do things, but the less strength you're going to have. Now, as we get older, strength to me is becoming less and less important, right? I still want to be strong, but I don't want to be trying to do one rep maxes where I'm passing out on the floor like I did last week, which I didn't bring up, by the way, which I got to bring up really quick. So really quick, I was sick last week. This is a good story. Just quick sidebar real quick. Sorry to derail this for a second, but I was sick last week and, you know, I was feeling it on the deadlift side. And I hit 455 for 8 reps, which I had never done before. My closest was 455 for 6. And I'm like, huh, that's cool. I'm like, I wonder, you know, and I'd already done 305 for 12. I had done 405 for 12, and then I did 455 for 8. So that was like my 405 was my warm-up, and my 305 was my warm-up. And then my 455 by 8 was my thing. So I'm like, huh. I'm like, I wonder what, you know, I'm feeling really solid right now. Let's just try to see if I can get to 425. I'm sorry, 525. So I load up 525 on the trap bar for deadlifts, for traditional deadlifts. And I pulled it like no problem, like boom up, no issue. Form was perfect. I'm like, damn, I just did a new PR at 525. My previous PR was 505. And that was like when I did my 505, I mean, I was struggling to get up there. I mean, I barely got up there. And 525 moved up like cake. So I'm like, well, shit, I'm going to try 545. And mind you, I'm sick. You know, like I'm sick as a dog. Like I got literally, I set up a picture. I have my intro workout drink and then I have like 70 used Kleenexes that I've been blowing my nose with just trying to, you know, stay conscious as I'm working out and sweating. And, you know, I pulled 545 and my back definitely arched. I wasn't happy with the technique or form. It's definitely a heavy weight for me. So, you know, I think, you know, trying to do that again, I probably wouldn't do, you know, until I get a little bit stronger. But then I hit 545 and I got up and then I set it down. And then all of a sudden I just saw black, like my whole vision just blacked out. And I fell to the ground and I had to like compose myself because I had lost my vision and I got all dizzy. So, you know, probably not the best to do when you're sick. And so that's the first time that's ever happened to me before, but hit a new PR last week on strength. But why I bring that up now is the last time I've ever tried to do a one rep max was probably, I don't know, 3 months ago, 4 months ago, because I'm not in it for one rep maxes or maximum amount of strength. I'm in it for growing my muscles and getting stronger, you know, gradually stronger as I go along with it. So when you think about rep ranges and you start planning your program, you know, generally I like to think of strength as the three rep to 8 rep mark. So when we say that, you know, like how much can you lift maximum to the 3 to 8 rep mark, or, you know, 5 to 10, you know, it's not an exact science. So if you're lifting 8 or 9, it's not like you're not going to get strength from that, but lower rep ranges with higher weights traditionally hit your strength more than your hypertrophy of muscles. Now there's some studies that show there's similar benefits. So you can still grow muscle very similarly to higher rep ranges, but the higher rep ranges typically have a much better, growth statistic on muscle hypertrophy. So, you know, if you're in the 3 to 8 range and you're maxing out, let's just say you're at 7, you're just struggling to get up and just like locking in, it's really tough. It's your max set. You're going to be focusing primarily on strength at that period of time. Now, when we plan our workouts, usually your heavy compound movements are the first ones to go. And those are going to be the ones that focus predominantly on strength. So you're going to be doing more, higher volume, higher weight, type of sets. So I usually try to do a warm-up series of like, you know, two by 12 sets, you know, two sets of 12. And then I do two sets of really heavy between a 5 to 10 rep range. And then I do 1 to 2 sets, depending on volume, of the 15 rep range or the higher rep ranges for more of the muscle hypertrophy aspects. And those are like, so I have, I'm going to say compound movements, you know, bench press, you know, squats, deadlifts, those types of things, rack pulls, you know, shoulder presses, those types of things that you're hitting big muscle groups for those. And shoulder press is not necessarily a big compound movement, but one that I'll do the same type of rep range for. So when I do those, you know, the rest of my workouts then after that are attacking the muscle to fatigue it to near muscle exhaustion or fatigue to where, you know, it's completely done. What we call a one RPE. And so when you look at RPE, it's basically a way of perceived it's rating of perceived exertion, which is where you think you're at and how many reps you have left in the tank. So if you're trying to get to a 15 rep range and you're just going up for a bicep curl and you're just struggling to get it up and you're just up here and you can't get in, your muscles are dead. you know, you're at a zero RPE, which means, you know, you don't have any more in the tank. But if I come up and I can barely come up and I can finally get it up, but if I did another one, I'd be at that fatigue point. You'd be at a one RPE, or I have one left in the tank to be able to get that up. It's the you know, how many sets or reps you think you, I'm sorry, how many reps you think you have left. So, you know, in those areas, you know, when you're trying to hit muscle groups, you're trying to get them to exhaustion. And that's going to really focus on muscle growth and muscle build as you're going through those. So you do your big heavy compound movements first, and then you usually set it up, you know, with hitting different, those same muscle groups in different ways at higher rep ranges, you know, usually the 12 rep range or 15 rep range, or even for me, you know, I'll do BFRs or blood flow restrictions, and I'll do 30 rep ranges, 15, 15, 15. So 30, 15, 15, 15, just to completely fatigue my triceps and biceps out. So when you're planning this, rep range makes a big difference in what you're actually going and doing.
Yeah. And I think actually talking about a study in terms of volume. So studies will say that if you do the same volume, whether you do it low reps and high weight, or whether you do it lower weight and higher reps, if you're doing the same volume, you will have the same, pretty much the same muscle growth overall. But if you do it with the lower reps and higher weight, generally you will be stronger. So, which makes sense, because obviously you have to get used to actually moving or lifting the weight. When it comes to compound movements, I guess the best way to describe those is like multi-joint movements. So you're moving more than just one joint. So obviously with a bench press, you know, it's your elbows and it's your shoulders. With the squat, it's obviously your hips and it's your knees and stuff like that. So more than one joint would probably describe a big compound movement. And again, to touch on a point that Hamley mentioned last week, that having knowing the difference between local or systemic fatigue is a good one, because with systemic fatigue, it's overall in your body. And it's probably what I've described before as, you know, thinking about your central nervous system. So rack pulls, big, heavy compound RDLs, or, you know, whatever it is that literally like fries your entire body, that you feel completely drained after, versus being able to do like more accessory work or isolation movements, that it's just one muscle group that you're trying to take that to absolute failure. And I think knowing the difference between taking a big compound movement, as you said, to that sort of one RPE place, or knowing that you can maybe go to as close to failure as possible without absolutely fucking wrecking yourself, and the difference between that and doing an isolation movement, or, you know, feeling the pump if you're talking about a bicep curl, like you can get a lot more from it in terms of the amount of reps and whatever else, because it's not the same overall fatigue in your body. And I think that's an important sort of difference to note. And again, to sort of touch on something that Hamley mentioned last week, you know, knowing where you're at in the journey and knowing sort of what way you should program for that, and looking at lifting weights as a skill that you need to build on over time, that,
yeah,
you know, going in and doing, people who are maybe beginners, you know, who are just starting out, they can go in and they can do 4 sets of 8 to 12. Whereas if I were to go and do 4 sets of 8 to 12 and try and push it to the intensity that I do now, like I wouldn't be able to do it. Like I'd maybe get 2 sets in the 8 to 12 rep range. And if I'm trying to pull or push that same weight after that, my body just, it wouldn't have it because of that sort of systemic fatigue. So sort of knowing where you're at and how to progress through those different rep ranges through your training journey, I think is important too.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that too, because like if I'm doing a deadlift, for example, you know, my goal is to get, you know, two really heavy sets in, right? As part of that. And so like super heavy to where I'm, you know, exhausted. But there are times where, you know, I've progressed well where I hit my second set. I'm like, well, shit, I'm going to go do another one. I'll do another heavy set, you know, and then I'll go do another heavy set, and then I'll fatigue, you know, it out with more of like a 15 endurance type of set on it. So you're having a good understanding of that, and then whacking your muscles in different ways, hitting them in different ways, you know, focusing on those muscles are really important. So like, you know, if I'm doing a squat day, for example, you know, doing, you know, heavy squats and burning those muscles out. And then I'll typically do, you know, leg presses afterwards to focus very heavily on quad isolation to where they're completely fatigued, to where I can barely walk afterwards. Right. And then I'll even, you know, do it afterwards where I'll grab the TRX and I'll just do jump squats, you know, like,
I'm just going to caveat this right now. I will not be doing jump squats whenever I'm in your gym. I will not be. No way.
They suck.
Well, I'll be doing jump squats.
My buddy, go ahead. Sorry.
No, you go ahead.
I was gonna say my buddy that came over a couple weeks ago or last week or whatever for the leg day. You know, I was telling the story before, but like he literally could only get like 2 jump squats in after I destroyed him on the leg side. He's like, nope, I'm good. You know, like,
no, I'll not be doing them at all. I think, you know, what you were saying there about attacking the muscle in different ways. So the way that I would look at it is the big compound movements are for overall strength, whatever it is that you want to get stronger in. Yes, okay, you should be in tune with what muscle group that movement is using. So for example, you know, if we're talking about an RDL, you should know that you should feel that in your hamstrings and your glutes, or if it's a bench press, you should know that you are feeling that in your chest. But with all those multi-joint movements, you need to recognize that it's always more than one muscle group doing the work. So there's always, you know, a secondary muscle. So okay, bench press, you think chest, but triceps is the secondary muscle. So there's always you need to look at, okay, I'm not progressing in my bench press. Do I need to work more on my triceps to be able to get more from that movement or whatever it is? Once you've done the big compound movements and got those out of the way and you're focused on isolation work and you're talking about looking, like training the muscle through different ranges, what I mean by that is thinking about like mid to lengthened range or mid to shortened range. The best way I can describe that is if you put your arm out straight, obviously your bicep is fully lengthened. Because it works in opposition to your tricep is fully contracted, so they're going to be opposites. If you contract your bicep fully, that's it in its shortened range, but that's your tricep in its fully lengthened range. So knowing that you can move the muscles through different ranges and not just have to do them all together. So the way that I would look at that, again, if we talk about an RDL, if I were programming RDLs, and anybody who is a client of mine, and probably Dave, you as well, that you know that I would program hamstring curls first, which will get blood flowing into the muscle, so you have a good connection with the muscle, and that will work it through the shortened range. Then when you go to do the RDL, whenever you're at the bottom of the movement, that's your hamstring in the fully lengthened range. So that's making sure that you work the muscles through every single range that they have available. I get a lot of hand gestures there. So if anybody saw that on YouTube, apologies, like sign language.
One of the books I would heavily recommend that Ben had recommended to me, and I do not recommend this on an audiobook. There's too much visuals on this. You really need to buy the actual physical book. Sorry. But it's Nick Mitchell and Jonathan Taylor's Principle of Muscle Building Program Design. And for those that are on YouTube can see it here.
I'll put the link in the show notes. It's actually really good because it gives you the setup of each movement. It gives you what you should be feeling. It talks you through the sort of internal cues. And it also gives the coaching cues. So next week when I'm standing beside you, I'll be giving you the coaching cues because I'll be stood there beside you giving them. So it gives you, it's obviously designed for coaches. So
I'm nervous. I'm nervous.
You should be. But yeah, it's obviously designed for coaches. So it gives you the sort of things that number one, you should be looking out for, but number two, you should be feeling. And again, you could probably back me up on this, you know, any sort of exercise execution videos that you send across, I'll always tell you what it should feel like in terms of like where you should be feeling it. Also what it should look like in terms of what way your body should be moving, what way your joints should be moving. But also I'll give you what you should be thinking about as an internal cue. And I often find that those internal cues are the keys to unlocking how the actual movement should be. Do you know what I mean? The internal cue, say for example, of something that you're doing that you're trying to create stability from around your core. So you talked about overhead press. If you think about the setup of that, the internal cue I would give for that, for the setup, is screw your heels into the ground. So it's going to give you stability, like connection to the ground. Automatically, if you're stood here, as I am now, anybody, apologies again, watching on YouTube. So if I screw my heels into the ground, my automatic reaction is that my glutes tense together, so they're stable from the waist down. Then I think about bracing my core, and the way that I would describe that is, imagine someone was going to punch you in the stomach, what you would do, and the answer is not headbutt them or run away. It's like tense up your stomach in terms of bring the bottom of your ribs to the top of your hips and hold that tight. So that's all the internal cues of what you should be feeling, and they don't come, you know, that's the bits that you can't see in someone else doing the movement.
Yeah, and one thing to note is if you don't have a personal trainer, you don't have somebody there with you or remote or whatever,
just DM me.
Well, we have a workout forum on the Discord channel, so you know you can always post pictures or video the best, obviously, of those, and we'd be happy to give critique if you want it. You know, we're not going to say, hey, you're doing this wrong or whatever unless you ask for it. I hate that. Like, I hate posting a video and like, oh, you should have did this, or looked at this spot in the wall, or done this, and oh my gosh, you're doing a traditional versus a sumo and whatever. I don't care about any of that shit. So, but one thing to also note is before you do an exercise, especially if it's new to you, research it. So one of the things I incorporated last week that I hadn't done before, actually, I didn't tell you this, Ben, sorry about that, is a good morning. which were in the previous programs for the Nipper one, but I never did them because I was terrified of that from a back perspective. But I started doing some more research on it, and you know, the benefits of the spinal erector, as well as obviously hitting your glutes and hammies, are very beneficial. So I started off literally doing my good mornings last week with just the barbell, and I watched video upon video upon video just to make sure I was doing it right. And I'll send you a video of it when I do it next week, Ben. Well, you'll be here next week, so it's not gonna matter. I did my good mornings, which is basically you load the bar on the small of your back, and then you just, you know, basically bend forward and really hitting your glutes and hammies, but it also hits your spinal erectors. And you know, I started off with that. I did that three times just to make sure I was good with the movement. And then I added, you know, 15 pounds just to feel like I was comfortable with that. And then I felt like I could go a little bit heavier. So, you know, start off small, make sure you got your form and technique down right. You know, could I have loaded, you know, 150, 200 pounds on that? Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I wasn't comfortable with the movement from a mind muscle body connection. So research the movements that you're doing to make sure you're doing it appropriately. And if you're feeling things like the small of your back is hurting, you got pain there, or your, you know, your shoulder is hurting and you have a sore shoulder for the next week, you know, you're probably doing something wrong there, that can easily be corrected, just by with some form and technique. So I think that's
can important. I, just before yeah, yeah. you continue, can I say yeah. why I don't like good mornings and why I don't program them?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So if you remember, a lot of the things that I talk about are trying to make the moment arm as short as possible. So what I mean by that example is if you're doing a dumbbell lateral raise and you have the dumbbell in your hand, the distance between your shoulder and the dumbbell is the moment arm. So the further it is, the more difficult it is, but the harder it is to get the connection through the muscle. So I've said to you before about doing them on a cable and having the cuff around your elbow for a shorter moment arm. So if you imagine the movement that you're doing in a good morning is pretty much identical to what you're doing in an RDL, but the bar is just in a different place. So if you imagine you come down in the good morning because the bar sat at the top of your back, if you're down the moment arm then goes from where your hips are to where the bar is, versus if you hold the bar for an RDL, it's a lot closer to your body. So it's a lot more, you can create a lot more stability, I feel, in an RDL. So
yeah,
I'm not totally against the movement, but programming that for a beginner, not saying that you're a beginner, and I'm happy for you to do it, but this is why I don't program it from the start, because it's difficult to create that stability through your core and not feel that through your lower back and still get the movement that you're feeling through your hamstrings and your glutes, all while having a bar on your back. So that's why I don't program it. I'm not against it.
No, it makes perfect sense. Yeah.
But it's a you know, I would program an RDL over a good morning.
So the only reason why, I'll just be fully transparent, the only reason I'm doing good mornings versus RDLs is I hate RDLs. So
why do you hate them? Well, it's my favorite. I feel like
this I know.
A bit emotional about that.
Like, listen, I don't mind rack pulls, but I feel like that extra, like, you know, 4 inches that you have to go down for an RDL.
Because you know that I can lift more weight. In it than you can.
Tell me. Listen.
Come on. I'll be honest in here.
No. The truth of the matter is this. Okay, so days that I'd be doing RDLs are the same days that I would be doing, you know, deadlifts, right? Because you want to hit your glutes and hammies. You know, obviously, that's not necessarily true. But typically, I'm going to start with a deadlift, and then I'm going to move into RDLs, you know, as a secondary. And with me, I like doing like my big, heavy ones at the beginning. And so, like, for example, if I start off with like rack pulls are my heavy back exercise. And then I'll do things like a T-bar row, you know, I'll do rows, you know, pull downs, things like that. But I don't like doing two back-to-back super heavy, like insane sets, especially on my back.
It's too much pressure on your lower back.
Too much pressure, right? I've gotten injured because of that. So, you know, that's the reason why I went to good mornings, is because I feel like I can go a little bit lighter, do more reps of it. But I guess I could do the same thing with RDLs too. I just don't have to go super heavy with it, right?
Yeah. And then that's just an ego thing, because you're like, I know I can lift more weight than this, but I just don't want to. So I'm just going to change. I'm just going to change the movement. But no, you're absolutely right. Like, you know, and we've touched on this before, and this, whenever you originally wrote that program out, like, that was one thing that I noted straight away in it, that there was a lot of lower back loading stuff, and being able to separate that is vital.
That was awesome, by the way. I'm glad you did that.
Yeah. I find that you're exactly right. If I have heavy RDLs or rack pulls or whatever it is at the start of my plan, anything that I go to do after that, my lower back is just,
it's not done.
it's not sore in terms of like I haven't injured it, but it's the same as if you imagine doing not too many, but if you imagine taking your biceps to failure, you have the pump, so you can still get the pump in your lower back, but because it's on your lower back and the muscle is slightly different than others, you do feel like it is that pain. And because of the nature of where it is and because of your hips and that hip hinge movement, it limits to what you can do after that. You feel totally fried. And a bit of a side note that I meant to put to touch on earlier on, and you're talking about, you know, 1RM. I spoke about this on the call last week when Daniel asked, like, how do you know when to go for it and whatever else? If it's on the table, take it. So, like, was it Saturday? Saturday I sent you the video of me doing the rack pulls. Like, I wasn't intending on doing a 1RM, but I was like, do you know what? These feel good. I want to sort of test out and see how far I can push it. And I know we've joked about it before as, well, if I can do 10 reps at this weight, then technically via this calculator, my 1RM should be this. But there's a big difference between what it technically says and actually fucking lifting the weight. So I just wanted to sort of test that out. But again, after that, there was no other lower back movements that I could do. So, you know, even if I was doing a pull down, I had to do it slightly differently so that there was less pressure in my lower back and whatever else. So it's just being mindful of that and not programming those big compound movements back to back. You need to have that one main movement that potentially is lower back loading, whether it's a deadlift or an RDL or a squat or whatever it is, that's that movement, and then you sort of back off on them.
The feeling that Ben is explaining on the lower back, it's almost like a tightness fatigue feeling is the best way of putting it. It's not a pain. It's more of like your back is just tired and it's tight, and you know, it just feels like it's, you know, you can hurt it is the best way of explaining it, but it's not, you know, it's fine. It's just tired. So, you know, if I'm feeling that, especially if I'm, there are days where, you know, I'll have the tightness in my back the next day, you know, and I'll be running and I'll feel that tightness again in my back. Again, it's not hurting, but it's just sore. And
you're
it's
conscious
just,
of
you know,
it?
What's that?
You're conscious of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know, you gotta be careful. You know, you don't want to keep loading more and more weight onto your back, you know, especially if it's not fully recovered yet. So that's
I guess a broad generalization, you know, 90% of the people have some sort of weakness in their posterior chain, upper back, lower back, glutes, hamstrings. You know, if you sit down a lot, it doesn't help that situation. People don't really focus on warming their hamstrings up or warming their glutes up, that it can create the stability that you need to do those big compound movements. But then again, a lot of people go straight into doing those big compound movements that are lower back loading and do challenge your lower back. And that's when people start to run into injuries. So if you're doing any form of deadlift, if you're doing like RDL, conventional deadlift, sumo deadlift, trap bar deadlift, any of those, if you're doing even hip thrusts or squats or anything like that, that you're hinging your hips, but you don't have a strong enough posterior chain, as in the whole chain that goes right down, to do it, then that's whenever you're going to run into injuries. And they're the, you know, if people go to the gym, like, oh, well, how much do you deadlift and whatever else? Like, they're the go-to movements, but people don't sort of reverse engineer it to shit, okay, right. And I'm pretty sure I said this again to you right at the very start. Like, we need to work on strengthening your lower back. And anybody that comes to me at the start, any sort of issue, I'm like, we need to work on strengthening that, because it might not be your lower back that's weak. It could be that your glutes are weak, or it could be that your hamstrings are weak, or there's definitely something within that chain that we need to work on. So before we go trying to do a 505 fucking deadlift, we need to work on how we can strengthen.
Or 545, you know, just throw that.
Before we do a 545, we have to do a 505. But yeah, it's about strengthening everything down through and understanding, you know, how your body works and how things are connected, and that it's not just, oh, a deadlift is just a movement where you lift the bar up. Like, what's going on physiologically in your body?
Well, I think you bring up an amazing point here, and I want to move on to gym equipment and
thanks for your
time programming. which is, this is a full body thing that you need to do, right? I mean, you need to work every muscle group as part of this, and they all work cohesively together. So, you know, it's funny. I saw a picture or a meme. It was like these five guys that are on a beach just fully shredded, and they had the tiniest chicken legs I've ever seen in my entire life. And it was like not a single leg day had ever been had or something like that. You know, you don't want to skip leg days, right? You know, it's part of your overall body and strength. And honestly, your legs are one of your largest. They are the largest muscle group that you have in your body, the strongest. And, you know, you want to be able to, and if your goal is, you know, calorie burn, growing muscles, the legs are a huge part of that. You know, and if you're trying to shed fat, again, legs are a huge part of that. So when you're incorporating, you know, these types of exercises, you want to strengthen every part of your body that you possibly can. You know, the biggest area that I have, my two areas that piss me off the most, just based on length of my calves, because I'm so tall, filling out the calves and that muscle takes forever. Like I hit my calves literally five damn times a week, and I still don't look like I have massive calves, right? I'm like, how do I grow calves? You know, like that's my biggest thing. But that in my chest is also proportionately very large as far as where I'm at. And I feel like developing that has been a long process as well. But, you know, you want to find these different areas that is hitting all of your different parts of your body so that you have full body strength as you start to go along with it. So that gets me to my next one. And we, you know, I want to get into one, what type of equipment do you need to start off? And then two, what does a training program look like as far as actual movements, just as an example with base amount of equipment? Now, obviously there's a difference between going to a gym that has a lot of options from, you know, Smith machines to dumbbells to whatever you need, to having your own personal gym. And I would say, I'll let Ben go first on what are your top three things that you would recommend, or top five things that you'd recommend if you're just starting off to get in your gym as far as you know, as far as the gym equipment.
So you mean if you are going to
resistance
at home?
Yes. Yeah.
I think this is very budget dependent and something that obviously we need to be very conscious of. And I think the thing that I recommended the most at the start of the original lockdown, whenever everybody was freaking out and everybody had to stay at home, was the set of adjustable resistance bands. So you've seen them before. They're like tubes and they're like, you know, red, blue, green, black, and yellow. And they all have obviously different resistance band or resistance per band. And the reason that I recommended those was it was accessible. You could have it in the house. You could attach it to the door. They are versatile in terms of what you could do. You could hit each muscle group. You can fucking stick them in the bag if you're going traveling. So you can do a lot with them. And as I said, you know, they're like $16 or something. Like they're not expensive at all. So having those to be able to do so much from them, I think that they are, you know, even if somebody came to me and they already had some sort of stuff in the house, I would always recommend that because of the variety of things that we can do from them. The next thing that I would recommend is, if beyond that and you have the budget for it, is something that's heavy. So, you know, whether it's a set of adjustable dumbbells or just regular dumbbells or something like that, something that you can really push weight on. And the thing about that as well is if you have the bands and that, then you can add more resistance to it and you can sort of use both of them together. How many do you need? Three?
I said 3 to 5. So whatever you want.
Ooh, okay. Right. So resistance bands, dumbbells. After that, then I would look at a barbell. So I was fortunate enough that just before lockdown hit, I actually bought a barbell and plate. So whenever the original lockdown hit, what I had to train with was a set of resistance bands, a barbell, and that's 150 kilos, so like 300 odd pounds worth of plates. And that's all that I had the entire time. So a barbell, if you have the space for it and the budget for it, I would definitely recommend that. And then some sort of plates, because you can do so much then with, if you've got resistance bands, dumbbells, and the barbell with weights. Then you're moving into, should you have a rack, should you have a bench, all those sorts of things. But it depends on what your budget is, I guess. But that yeah, will tick a lot of the boxes.
Budget's obviously a very important aspect of this. One of the things that is a little bit on the pricey side, you know, it's a reoccurring membership fee, and it's, you know, the initial upfront cost, I think, is, let me see, it looks like it's around $3,000. So $29.95 is what's called a tonal. And I really like that from a full body workout perspective, because it comes with a bench and it's versatile in everything you do. And it's all resistance training and up to 100 pounds per each one. If you're just looking for like a small amount of space in your wall, can do everything you need it to do as far as full body workouts, and has a trainer there that shows you how to do a technique and actually monitors like your form and everything, Tonal is a great option for that. I've had it for years. I still use it every single workout that I have, even though I've exceeded its weight progression on certain movements, like, you know, but even on like bench press, for example, though, I'm still not hitting 100 pounds per arm on that because it's resistance, you know, stabilizers. So it's, you know, you're hitting different muscles versus, you know, if I'm doing barbell or bench, I can do, or dumbbells, I could hit a much higher amount of weight. So there is a big difference there. But, you know, for lower body, especially for like legs, I'm obviously, you know, doing much more than 100 pounds per on deadlifts. But it's great for the fatigue side of the house. But, you know, a tonal can be everything you need in just one specific gym. Smart technology tracks your progress, tracks your volume, everything we've talked about in this podcast. So it makes everything simple for you. It's one of the ones that I would heavily recommend. I think it has a, you know, I think it's like $20 or $30 a month after that. So it's, you know, the initial fee. So again, I'm, you know, if you can afford it from a budget perspective, that's a good option. What Ben had mentioned though, you know, from more of the budget side of the house, having just a bench, you know, a simple bench, doesn't need to be any fancy, and some dumbbells. What I'd recommend if you're, you know, looking at doing this long term is look at loadable dumbbells. These are dumbbells that, you know, are basically blank, and then you can buy plates to put onto them at various different weights. So all you have to do is buy the plates that you can still use for your barbell bench if you have that, or other areas, and you just load the dumbbells onto those and then clamp them off with, you know, like a one of those rings, those collars. And then you can load those up as much as you want to. I think each dumbbell can go up to like 255 pounds or something like that. So, you know, I mean, I'm not there. I'm nowhere near that. Helmy probably there, but not me. Yeah, so yeah. Helmy's a big boy. But, you know, those are very affordable. You know, I think they're you can get some decent ones for like $50 each. And then you can obviously buy the weights, which, you know, can cost them. But, you know, weights can, you know, you can get those fairly cheap from that side. And dumbbells with a barbell, you can do almost everything you possibly can. I mean, you do goblet squats, you can do squats, you can do, I mean, when I'm at Orange Theory, it's a combination typically of TRX bench and, you know, like a bench that you can go onto and dumbbells, and you can do full body workouts with that. I mean, you can do deadlifts with dumbbells, you can do, you know, shoulder presses, bicep curls, tricep extensions, you know, you name it, you can do full body workouts just with those two pieces of equipment. You know, if you're getting more fancier than that and you have a little more budget, a rack is also a great thing to have because you can do a lot more bigger compound movements like squats and bench. I'd obviously recommend getting a two deep one. What I mean by that is it's not just one rack that comes over. It usually has safety straps in those. I've needed those many times, even as of early as last week, you know, where you're just pushing yourself so hard. You're like, I can get this last one. You're like, yeah, nope. You know, and then it comes down on you. You know, you don't want to die. So, safety straps are an important part of that. And obviously safety is a big part of that as well. So those are kind of the main ones that I would hit on from a initial purchase perspective of what I would like. If you're just starting off base and you want to do more of the resistance stuff that Ben had talked about, there's what's called the X3 bar. I use that for when I'm traveling. So, it comes with the platform and the bands go over the platform and then you have a bar that's with it. And you can do, you know, bicep curls. You can do shoulder extensions, shoulder presses. You can do deadlifts with it, and it's all packable in a, you know, small container that you can, you know, bring with you on your trips and travel and things like that too. But it can also do full body workouts with it, just like that. So if you have a small space, I think X3 bar is like $300. Again, that's a lot of money, obviously, but you know, from an equipment perspective, you know, it can do pretty much everything you need to, from that specific side. So those are some of the key pieces there from an equipment perspective, I'd say are foundational.
Yeah. I think one thing that I realized over the past 2 years is you need a lot less than you think you need, no matter what your goal is. You know, obviously if we're taking it to the extremes and, you know, you're a fucking bodybuilder and you need the right massive amount of weights, then yes, of course. But you know, from a fat loss perspective or even from a slight muscle gain perspective, like you need a lot less than you think. And, you know, before everything, when the shit hit the fan, like obviously I was like, you need a full gym and blah, 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 blah. But genuinely, like I genuinely had a barbell, very fortunate to have it, and some plates and those resistance bands. And I mean, I got in pretty decent shape across the summer. I was training out the back. It was sunny, sunny for over here, but it was, you know, it was good in terms of being able to have that. But then again, people were coming to me and clients that I had at the time, they were training at home and they were coming to me like with a very limited, with the most random fucking things that I don't know why anybody ever has. But yeah, Obviously at that time you couldn't get equipment because the whole world was trying to get it because everybody was fucking training at home. So I had to get quite creative in terms of what we were doing, but you can do a lot more with a lot less equipment than you think, especially if your goal is fat loss, because, you know, it's just about doing the movements, doing more reps and having a higher output overall.
Yep. So we got about 10 minutes left. Want to get into what does an actual lifting session look like for full body, and what's a push pull leg split look like? So I think that's important to go through, like what do the actual movements look like? And we'll just start with a basic one, just based on the equipment we talked about. Let's just say you have a rack and you have a dumbbells and a bench. That's all we're talking about here from a simplicity perspective. So what would a full body workout look like to you, Ben?
So the way that I break
it, and also one thing I also bring out too is before we start on that is how many times would you recommend doing it a week? You know, if muscle hypertrophy is your goal of growing larger and bigger, burning fat, you know, et cetera, not necessarily strength, how many times would you do it a week?
I generally, do you know what? I would 9 times out of 10 start people with full body workouts and do it 3 times a week because it's manageable time wise. It's not a massive commitment, and then it gives us somewhere to sort of grow into the program. So if we're starting with 3 days a week and you see progress, and then people come, clients come back and they're excited and they're like, can I do another day? Like, what would happen if I do another day? It gives me room to sort of go with that versus I go to you, okay, right, we're going to start with 6 days a week. Then after that, it's a shit show because we don't have any more time. So 3 days a week, definitely for full body. The way that I break a full body workout down is push exercise, pull exercise, squat movement, hip hinge, and a carry. So what I mean by that, whenever we talk about push, it's something that you're pushing. So whether it's bench press, overhead press, you know, leg extension, things that you're pushing, pull movement, you know, any sort of row, any sort of deadlift, something that you're pulling, bicep curls, squat, obviously, as it says, you know, could be barbell squat, goblet squat, dual dumbbell squat, whatever, not TRX jump squats because you're not doing those. Hip hinge
I will do Bulgarian split squats, so what will we get in each way?
I will. I definitely
will. You do those. I know you do those. I hate those.
You hit those in RDL. I was like, what the fuck? What is this relationship we have going on here? Anyway, hip hinge movement is something where you hip your where you hinge at the hip, so RDL, something like that. And then a weighted carry is something like farmer's walks or something where you hold something heavy that's based around your core or whatever else. If we're talking about how to actually put it together, as we said, generally how I would do it is if I'm looking at 3 days, I would basically pick 1 or 2 big compound movements per session and put those in, and then sort of put the opposite accessory work in, if that makes sense. So if we're doing, say, for example, a deadlift is the pull movement or the compound movement, and then you're doing bench press or whatever. So deadlift would be the pull movement, bench press would be the push movement. Then what I would try and do is have the opposite accessory work. So if you've used your sort of hamstrings and glutes for the pull movement and your chest for the push movement, then accessory work you would maybe do biceps or, you know, shoulder side raises or something like that, so that you can get the fatigue in the big compound movements, but then you're not totally fried whenever you get into the accessory work, and then sort of opposite it in the next workout. Does that make sense?
Yep, absolutely.
And I would do 3 times a week and sort of try and hit those, and then obviously monitor and progress. As we said before, the simplest way to look at it is work within a rep range, 8 to 12, 10 to 15, 20 to 30, whatever the fuck you want the rep range to be. Say, for example, you are working through 10 to 15, and this week you get 12 reps at 100 pounds. Then next week you need to get 13 reps, 14 reps, or 15 reps. I'll caveat that by saying, if you're feeling good in the session and you're 15, don't just stop because it's 15. Like, if you can keep going, keep going. If you get 18, if you get 20, then you know you're way off in terms of the weight you're doing.
Yep.
But then once you hit that upper rep range, then that's whenever you increase the weight. So if you've gone from 100 pounds, then go to 120 pounds or, you know, whatever it is, 140 pounds or whatever. And then you'll maybe go back down to 10 reps, and then you'll go back to, okay, I need 11, I need 12, I need 13, 14, 15, and up like that. One thing, again, I will say, and I touched on this, sorry for going on a run here. I know you do this too. So you need to remember that there are smaller increments than 20 pounds, because every time I go up on something, so it's like I sent you the video last week of me doing the rec pulls, and it was 528 pounds and the next one was 550. There's so many different weights and plates that I can use in between that. But me and my fucking ignorance just puts the 10 plates on the 10 pound plates on your side. So yeah, exactly. So you could put, you know, you can put 2.5 pound plates on either side and progress that way and do it in a, I guess, a smarter manner by doing it that way.
Yeah, and full body workouts are fantastic. I highly recommend them.
Tough,
I
mean, as well. Like if you're not used to doing full body, they are tough. Yeah.
That's what I started off with when I first started with the training programs. I love them. And, you know, and obviously you can progress to 4, you know, or 5, you know, whatever you want to do. I mean, 4 is a good number. 3 is great to start off with and get going. I mean, honestly, 3 is plenty for muscle growth and hypertrophy and getting what you need to. So
the thing about whenever you start to go into more than 3 times a week is then you have to do 2 sessions back to back, and you have to be a little bit smarter with your programming. So you don't want to do on Monday deadlifts and then on Tuesday do RDLs, because you're going to have that sort of fatigue from the day before. So you need to again think, okay, on Monday it's going to be maybe a full body push workout, and then on Tuesday it's going to be a full body pull workout, so that you're working the opposite way around. So yes, you can do full body 4 or 5 times a week, but you just need to be a bit smarter in it. And even if you really break it down, that potentially you'll do, you know, a big compound push movement one day, but then your accessory work the next day will be pushed. So for example, you'll do a bench press as your big compound movement on a Monday. And then as your push movement on a Tuesday, you'll just do like triceps or something like that. That's, you know, it's not focused specifically on the chest or something like that. So you just need to be a bit more smart with your programming on that front.
Yeah, and that gets us into breaking out what I personally prefer, which is the push-pull legs arms piece, which is...
I love push-pull legs. You know, it's my favorite.
It's my favorite.
I've actually been doing... So with Helmy, we do push legs. So
yeah.
It's the same, but it's just the other way around.
Yeah, I love... Push day is my favorite by far. I mean, you're hitting your chest, you're hitting your shoulders, you're hitting your triceps.
I can imagine that in the 5 days that I'm going to be in Ohio, we'll probably try and push... four times.
just keep blasting them. But push pull legs is what Ben was talking about on the full body side, but you're just hitting specific muscle groups. It's, you know, the similar concept to you hear bison, you know, our back and bis, chest and tries, very similar type of concept, right? Where push day, or your push day would be anything you're pushing out. So shoulders are a great exercise, shoulder presses, bench press, anything that's going to be doing your tricep extensions, you're going to hit your triceps, your shoulders, and your chest primarily on push days. For pull days, you're predominantly going to be hitting anything you're going to be pulling. So biceps and back are going to be your two criteria there. Now, obviously, your back is a huge muscle group. So there are a lot of things that you need to do to attack that, your upper back, your lower back, your spinal erectors, all those different things that kind of come into your back component as that. So that's why back and biceps. And I'll usually hit my traps as well as part of that day. So I'll hit, back and bis and traps. It's kind of my three areas that I hit for that. And then leg day, obviously being legs where you're, doing RDLs and, bench or squats and deadlifts and things to that effect to blow out, calf raises to blow out, each aspect of your thing. So for me, my leg days, I'm doing 6 days. I actually split my legs into two different days. So I do primarily quad and calf focused. On one day, and then I do glutes and hammies another day. So, reverse hack squats and deadlifts and things like that another day to focus on those so I can get a better isolation. I'm probably going to be backing off a bit more towards 4 or 5 days a week of lifting.
Probably. You are.
I am. Yeah. Yeah. It's getting to be too much. But the push-pull legs. And then Ben and I love arms day, which is just a day just dedicated to your weakest muscle groups, which are going to be your arms, right? In comparison to how much pressure you can put down via your legs, growing your arms and obviously having big arms are things that people look for. So I have a whole day dedicated just to hitting my arms. So, shoulder presses and bicep curls. And that's when I do my BFRs, my blood flow restrictions, completely burn them out and do them once a week. So I try to hit that muscle group, those muscle groups from a bicep, tricep, and shoulder perspective as much as possible. Even forearms, I'll do forearm workouts, anything I can do just to get the arms as strong as possible for that day. So I do, essentially 4 days a week would be ideal for that type of workout program where you're doing push, pull legs, and then arms.
Yeah. And I was always against arm days because I was like, you don't need a full arm day. But the way I sort of look at it now is, and you'll remember this, like generally I would have tagged arms on at the end of a leg day, which is fine. But come the end of a leg day, you're absolutely fried overall. So going in and wanting to do arms, you can't give it 100%. So
yeah,
the way that I would look at that from a programming standpoint, if you're doing 4 days, I would do push, pull, rest, legs, and then, like you said, a weaker body part. So if you're going to do shoulders as your weak body part, or if you're going to do pull, or if you're going to do biceps, or whatever your weak body part is, to have a day focused on that. Or something that I've been doing is push, pull, rest, legs, rest, and then a big compound day for people who just want to get strong in their compound movements, that they just go in and they do bench press or deadlift or whatever. So having the structure of push, pull, legs, and then having that sort of fourth day is a bit of freedom. But again, depends on what you have available equipment-wise, time-wise, where you're at in your training career and sort of going through these different cycles. And for me, it would be full body, then move to upper and lower, and then move to push-pull legs.
Yep. And last thing to hit on before we close it out, because we're out of time here. But 5x5s are also a popular one where, you're doing, 5 sets of 5 reps and usually typically very heavy. That's, again, more going to be strength-focused as you're going and doing those. But you're doing, obviously, 25 reps of something with very heavy weights. So we'll see 5x5s are usually applied in a lot of cases for workout programs and things like that too. So just, there's a whole bunch of different ways of doing skinning the cat and attacking your muscle groups. It's just what you prefer and what you do program wise. Full body, especially as you age, are fantastic workouts. I'd highly recommend them. There's a lot of great science behind them too.
You keep talking about as you age, like Cut it back a bit.
I mean, well, shit. I mean, I'm still going. I'm doing it. I mean, whatever, you know, I'm not doing full body, but, you know, I definitely, there's actually some really good science on full body workouts, for folks that are, you know, in their late 30s, early 40s and onward about how longevity and muscle, fatigue and growth, continues to happen at that point. So, some good stuff there, but all right. Well, that was it. Good podcast, yeah, man. We could have talked for 2 hours on this. Easy.
Next week, next podcast, we're going to be in the same room.
I know. I'm excited. We have to figure out how that works. Are we going to share this microphone?
No, like I have my laptop and I'll be just sitting like facing. Right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. As always, at WeHackHealth, hashtag WeHackHealth. If you're not in the Discord, get on it. I'll put the link in the description. And I guess I'll catch you next week.
See you next week, everybody. Take care.